Hi there and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years and I'm fascinated by how companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds and journeys, learning from their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado to today's episode. In the shifting landscape of modern work, freelancing has become a global movement. While digital marketplaces connecting businesses with freelance talent are emerging worldwide, Ireland has its own distinctive answer, the Indie List. Born during the uncertainty of 2020 pandemic, what founders Una Hurley and Peter McPartlin created has grown into a sophisticated talent platform hosting over 1,500 marketing freelancers that has challenged more than 5 million directly to independent professionals across Ireland. The Indie List has now entered an exciting new chapter with refreshed leadership team. Una Hurley continues as co-founder and CEO, but is joined by Rebecca Brooks, the famous one, not the infamous one, as managing director, bringing new energy and vision to the company's ambitious plans. Una Hurley is a marketing strategist, entrepreneur and champion of independent talent. With a career spanning over 3 decades across agency and consultancy roles, she has helped countless businesses successfully navigate the evolving marketing landscape. Rebecca Brooks is a seasoned entrepreneur with over 25 years experience, having founded 3 successful businesses spanning SaaS and marketing agencies. Her entrepreneurial mindset and growth-focused approach make her an ideal leader to guide the Indie List through the next phase of expansion. Una and Rebecca, you are very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Aidan.
Gosh, we sound pretty cool, don't we?
I know. It's amazing. It's like airbrushing. I can do a very text airbrushing, you know.
My imposter syndrome is just gone.
Right, I'll tell you where we're going to start. What are the roots of the business, Una? Let's get it there.
Okay. So I worked for a long time in advertising. And in 2005, I decided to become a freelancer. I had 2 small kids at home. I needed more freedom and flexibility. And I think there were other things going on within the agency client world that I just really saw as big problems. And I knew in my role in that company, I wasn't going to be able to do anything to change it. So it was 2005, Celtic Tiger, everything was, you know, booming. And I thought, well, look, I'll give freelancing a go. And if it doesn't work out, well, sure, I can get another job someplace else. And once I started the freelance journey, I mean, I loved it. I absolutely loved having that freedom and flexibility. I worked very, very hard. Like, it, you know, sometimes there was probably more freedom than I would have liked. You know, I would have liked more.
It's always that balance.
Yeah, exactly. But I worked really, really hard. And it was very difficult to kind of get it up off the ground. There was no Indie List back in 2005. Recruitment agencies weren't really interested at the time in talking to people who had agency experience. So I had to kind of, you know, really paddle my own canoe and work it all out as I went along. And I realized that there are so many really difficult things associated with self-employment. And just through my own resources and my own network, I was able to kind of, you know, find the support structures that would help me continue. So I spent probably about 10 years of my freelance career working as a pitch consultant. So I was helping big companies find and manage their big agency contracts and partners and so on. So I was doing that kind of macro matchmaking. And it really helped me kind of build my network and, you know, kind of create a fantastic client base, learn a huge amount about business, learn a huge amount about myself as well. And then 2020 hit and all of a sudden, like, the rug was pulled out from underneath my feet. Every single contract that I had for that year just was cancelled or postponed. And for the first time, you know, I think probably since my maternity leave, I had no work. Mm-hmm. And I found that really kind of weird and unsettling, but I wasn't sort of panicked because the disruption that we were experiencing during COVID, there was part of it that I really found very interesting and kind of exhilarating in a way. And you know that that line from that Leonard Cohen song, you know, there's a crack in everything and that's where the light gets in. So that was always one of the things that was kind of in my mind, thinking something, some creativity is going to emerge from this disruption. And I'm really excited to see what that's going to look like. Never in a million years did I think that I would create something in that space. So I was, remember that first lockdown, we were all trying to get used to what was happening. We were in that 2 kilometer restricted zone. I really wanted to help out in some way, but really found it very difficult to find a way to help. You know, we couldn't go and visit anyone, very little that we could do. I even tried to volunteer my services to the HSE and they didn't want me. So I was got to find something to do. So I was very happily swinging in my hammock on the Sunday of the bank holiday weekend, in the May bank holiday weekend, in my garden in Kilkenny with lovely weather. And I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put a post up on LinkedIn and I'm going to offer to pull together a list of freelancers who are available for work, and I'm going to connect them with my clients, because the world was changing so much. Pivot was the word of the time, if you remember, and so many businesses were moving from, you know, traditional bricks and mortar to online and e-commerce, and needed access to different sort of skill set, but finding it really difficult to find those people and really kind of know what good looked like and who was good and who was to be trusted. I suppose I had built up like a really fantastic trusted network over the previous sort of, well, over my whole career, but certainly in my freelance career. And people would have always come to me anyway beforehand to say, you don't know a really good graphic designer, or do you know a good account handler? And I would just kind of put these two people together because that's what I loved doing. And so I put this post up on LinkedIn, really thought very little about it. There was no plan. There was no master plan to set up a kind of a freelance, you know, business. And the next morning I woke up and I thought, holy mother of God, what have I done? I've offered to help and now I have to. And I had like hundreds of messages in my LinkedIn inbox, and I suddenly found myself out of the hammock, back at my desk, trying to put some shape on this, really trying to understand what had I gotten myself in for, because, you know, I sort of realised, you know, I can't give away this list of people. From a GDPR perspective alone, I'd be screwed. So I continued on anyway, really sort of trying to kind of put shape on this, build this very badly formatted Excel spreadsheet that would house all the information of these people who were signing up, you know, really, really eager to get work. I was looking at some of the people who was getting in contact with me who wanted to be on the list and thinking, wow, like this is, there's some really incredible talent out there that I hadn't really thought about before. I didn't realise they weren't, you know, that they were now working freelance, or they were working as a self-employed consultant. Sometimes the term freelance carries a bit of negative baggage.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like people kind of think, is it
freelance or freeload?
Free, yeah, or you know,
the fractional.
Yeah.
Not free, really committed to it, wants to be, kind of have the best of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly. Or a bit transactional, cheap also, you know, and we wanted to really kind of challenge those assumptions. So after a few weeks, my old pal, Peter McPartland, who you mentioned there in the intro, Peter and I had worked together in an agency years previously. And Peter said, you know, have you thought about how you could take this from a pro bono idea into a pro business idea? And I said, well, yes, but I'm definitely going to need help because this is definitely going to be a big job. And so myself and Peter had a few chats about how we might be able to kind of get this up off the ground. And so within about 4 weeks of having this conversation, we had the whole thing set up. So we launched it. We officially launched the Indie List on the 4th of July, Independence Day. Boom, boom. And we had about 50 people sitting on a very badly formatted Excel spreadsheet. And it literally took off like a rocket. We couldn't believe it. It within a couple of months, we had 300 people set up. We now have 1,600 people sitting on the platform. I don't really like to call it a platform because we're not really a platform, but we have a sort of piece of tech that allows us to kind of...
Well, I was going to ask you that. Do you see yourselves as a technology platform or a marketing services company?
Oh, what we say is we're human-powered and tech-enabled.
Okay.
So it's not, we're not reliant on the tech.
Right.
It's great. It's really good to have. It makes it a nicer experience for clients and for the community themselves. But it is the magic sauce that the people put in on top that actually makes it work so well. And it's why people keep coming back to us.
Yeah. So tell me how it actually works in practice then. So I'm a freelancer.
Okay. So you are self-employed, you're working for yourself, and you might struggle to find work on your own. Okay, it's always a bit of a challenge. So you come to the IndieList website and you sign up and create a profile. So it's behind a closed wall, but it's a little bit like LinkedIn. Okay, so it's a professional profile and resume of your past work. If you're in the creative fields, you can save up your portfolio. You can do links out. You can put in your day rates that you might charge, your availability, because some people have a regular gig that they're tied up in maybe 1 or 2 days a week and they only want to fill the remaining days. So all of that is in there. We'll also be adding a booking function so we can book time directly with people, but we're not using that at the moment. So they do that. Una and Amanda will go through and vet the individuals. We make sure we have references for everybody. We talk to them when we can, or they get sent onboarding messages to perfect their profile, and then they get accepted or declined. And if they're accepted, then they're in our community, and then they get access to everything that we offer, which is sometimes access to jobs and roles, but also education that we provide and put on, events that we're putting on. So it's a really good community. And that's just the member side. That's just the freelancers.
Okay. And then ultimately, what's the business model then?
So, well, we make, is this how are we making money?
Yeah. Not to be vulgar, but yes.
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of funny because, as I said, you know, when we started off, first of all, so many people would have looked at maybe me and Peter when he was in the business also as, you know, kind of super connectors maybe, and would have picked up the phone, called us, said, you know, would you know anyone for this role or that role? And we would have just kind of opened up our little black book and, you know, given that away. And then so the business model of the IndieList was like, oh, how do we make that mindset shift between actually, you know, just giving away our intel and now, you know, putting a value on it. How we make our money is through search fees, number one, because we spend a lot of time making sure that, number one, we understand what the client requirement is, and then number two, making sure that the people we put forward for the role are best placed for that particular position. Unlike, you know, you'll have heard of businesses like Upwork and Fiverr and so on and so forth. And in that particular situation, the client will self-serve, you know, so they'll go onto the platform. They'll say, I'm looking for a, you know, social media specialist, and they'll get served up 300 or 400 people who are right for the role. That doesn't really solve a problem for them, because they've got to find who's the right one and who's the best one. So what we do is we take all of that work away from the client. And rather than saying, here are the 20 or 30 people that might be right for the job, we're saying, here are the 2 or 3 that we think are spot on.
Okay.
They're available, they're within your budget range, and so on. So that is a very valuable part of our service, because it is enormous value for the client. It saves them a lot of time.
Fit. It just
the culture fit is so important. So you want to have the right technical skills, but also the right cultural fit. And so we charge a search fee for that. It's a small amount. It's a kind of, you know, it's just a very sort of small engagement fee. And after that, we apply markup on the freelancer's rate, completely transparent about our terms. It's a 17.5% markup on the freelancer's rate. We do all the billing, so we don't get cut out of the negotiations. We do all the billing. We control all of that. The client has we have a contract with the client, and then we have a contract with the freelancers. So the freelancer will always transact through us. The client will always come to us regarding the engagement.
So who do you consider then as the customer? Is it the freelance professional or the company that's hiring? Karen, both.
Both. Oh yeah. We represent the community. Okay. And we're our aim is to be the voice of independent marketing professionals, really. But equally, we, you know, have to do a great job for the client, so they're not going to come back. So we would consider ourselves to have two ICPs. Right. So they are the clients and the members.
Okay. And are there any other platforms like this in Ireland?
No. There is a production platform that's similar enough called Crudus, which work exclusively in film production and so on. So they represent a lot of the skills that would work in that industry. We're kind of probably broader than that in the sense that we have 1,600 people right across all of the roles within marketing, communications, digital and so on. So probably about 25% of our membership is the kind of creatives, so yeah, art directors, graphic designers, copywriters. About another 20% are the production and craft end of the creative services, so like your team here and photographers, videographers, producers and so on. 35% are digital, so everything from your kind of very technical web dev, UX, UI, AI, right through to, you know, social media strategy, content creation and so on. And the remaining 15% tend to be really senior C-suite marketers who, for one reason or another, have decided self-employment is now where I want to go. Because a lot of those people, I think, were had their mindset really sort of changed by COVID. They found themselves in a position where they had risen up through the ranks in the roles that they were, and the higher they got, the further away from the thing that they were really passionate about they found themselves. They had done the 9 to 9, they had the big office, they had the massive team, but they found themselves just managing P&Ls and managing boards and managing people, and really all they wanted to do was marketing. Mm-hmm. So we're really, really careful about who we bring into the talent pool. So, you know, you have to be really experienced, you have to have like industry endorsements, you have to have the right kind of attitude, you have to be really, really dependable. Because we have so much experience in this industry, we know what good looks like. Mm. And we're able to kind of filter through who is...
You're going to pass the smell test, as they say.
Exactly. And, you know, like when people will come to us and they might apply for a particular role on the jobs board that we have on our tech, and the reason that they'll apply is that they're looking for experience in that area. We're sort of saying that's a massive red flag for us, because we're not putting somebody into a role who wants to learn.
Yeah.
We are putting somebody into a role who has experience that they can
give
and that the client can benefit from that. So the client does not want to pay for the learning curve.
And it's a big differentiator between us and our competition who are out there, and not just in Ireland, but if you look globally, most of the freelance platforms that are out there, they're just tech. And they're also not just marketing. So they're offering finance skills or tech skills or whatever else. We are very clear on what we do. Mm-hmm. We are just marketing. I mean, I say just, but it's so broad. Mm. But we're staying with just marketing. And this human-powered element really makes a difference.
Mm. And when you look across the possible job suites that are in that, because as you said, marketing service is very broad. Do you think you have it covered at this stage, or do you, you know, when you look out there, do you think there's certain silos that actually we could do it a few more in here, or we don't have anybody in, you know, are there any blank silos right now?
I think so. Maybe we should tell you a little bit about the direction that we're moving. Mm. So we have 1,600 people in the platform at the moment, so we're pretty well covered for all things, but people think of us as being a freelance model, and actually we're an awful lot more than that now. So our new proposition, which we are going to be kind of soft relaunching over the summer, is focused on three pillars. So we're going to have education, workforce, which is the bit that you kind of currently know that freelance sits within, and community. Okay. Within the workforce pillar, the business kind of evolved naturally based on client need, where some clients loved the freelancers that they were working with and wanted to make them permanent. okay, or wanted to put them on a longer fixed term contract. And so we now offer both fixed term and permanent recruitment options. Okay. Whereas the freelance model is a new business meeting. People aren't going for interviews. We already know they're brilliant. They're experts. So for them, it's about new business matching. Whereas the fixed and permanent is about a recruitment model. So to kind of go around your question a little bit, yes, we have the broad set of skills, but we're also offering other things to people. So in the education pillar, to date, we've been doing free webinars. We call them LOLs, they're Learn Over Lunches, okay? And they've been mostly for the community. But we're going to be launching courses that are suitable for all marketers. So not just the community, but also for the clients. We're taking a very different approach to our education because there's loads of education out there and we're not looking to kind of compete with everybody. But we want our education courses to be super practical, on the job, applied learning that basically you learn today and tomorrow you're using it in your job.
Within the confines of marketing services, as opposed to education where I'm a freelancer, I've gone out on my own now, I have to set up a company. There's lots of things I have to learn as I set up a company. Is there any part of the education going to be in that as well?
So we do those currently free of charge as webinars, and we'll continue to do that. But we're going to house it all within an LMS platform so that it's easier for people to find. A lot of it will be video on demand. But when we launch our big kind of meaty courses, we will do them in person first just to, you know, iron out any kinks, and then they will become available on video on demand. But we'll continue to do the stuff for the community that they need. Like we recently did one about, you know, do you want to operate as a sole trader or as a limited company? What are the benefits, the pros and cons to both, all that kind of stuff.
Just on the whole entrepreneurship thing too, and I do think when freelancers oftentimes forget that they're actually entrepreneurs because they're going to have their own company, right? But like Rebecca, you're a serial entrepreneur. What lessons or learnings do you think you can bring to IndieList 2.0 from what you've done in the past?
I think what I love when I met Una is that Una started this with a really strong purpose, right? She wanted to do good and help people, okay? And then it naturally turned into a business, which was great. And I very much have the same values as Una. So when I kind of think about it, our job for the community is we want to make them feel empowered and good about themselves and be able to start their own businesses. But let's face it, when you're doing things on your own, it can be kind of hard. It's lonely and a lot of people suffer from imposter syndrome or think they're not good enough. You know, when you're in an organization, you have your managers and your HR team and people bolster you and back you up. And a lot of people who work for themselves don't have that. And we're trying to kind of provide that service to a degree and then bring them along the journey and show them what good looks like when they're starting their own business. But loads of them have been operating like this for a long time. They're really good and capable and know exactly what they're doing. But some people are younger and coming in and starting out, and we want to be able to support them.
And I think a lot of people really probably don't really know what it's really like to work for yourself. They maybe see all the upsides, you know, I can go surfing in the afternoon or I can spend time with my kids and, you know, all of that like great stuff, which sometimes you can, if you get the balance right, you can achieve that. But, you know, as Rebecca said, you know, it can be very lonely and, you know, from you find yourself coming from a salaried job where everything
salary,
is. Yeah, you've got your stable salary. You know what your income is going to be in 6 months' time. If you have an IT problem, you know how to get it. You've got somebody there to support you. If you need to get a deck created to present to your boss, you know, somebody else is going to do that for you. When you work for yourself, you are the boss of all of that. And that is a massive, massive learning curve. So we always kind of say, you know, you have to be wired in a certain way to be able to kind of work that way and cope with the downside as much as you know, kind of celebrate the upside. And sometimes, you know, we get people coming to us saying, I'm thinking of leaving my job and going freelance. And can I have some time to sit down and talk to you about this? And maybe you can kind of tell me all about it. We always, like, we're really clear with people. We're not career coaches. Mm-hmm. You know, we are not going to tell you to leave your job just because it's been successful for us doesn't necessarily mean it will be for somebody else. We're not going to tell you to leave your job. But once you have decided that that's the path you want to follow, then we're here for you 100%, providing you are good enough. You're good enough to be in the talent pool. As we've said a couple of times, with 1,600 people now in the talent pool, we're regularly offboarding people. Like, if we weren't offboarding anybody, we'd probably have about 10,000 people in the talent pool. Mm. But there would be people who will sign up who we know don't have the skill set. They don't meet the criteria. They don't meet the quality that we're looking for. They don't have skills that are relevant in today's massively changing marketing environment. And so, you know, we will kind of offboard them, or we just won't admit them into the talent pool, just from a quality assurance point of view.
And we can't provide work yet for those 1,600 members. Like, we're only at the start of our journey. So we've proved the MVP. You know, Una has done a brilliant job over the last kind of 4 and a bit years. But now we're ready to scale it and kind of reach out to a lot more clients. So all of the business so far has been inbound.
Yeah.
And that's because there's such a need. But we need to start telling people that we exist beyond our little circle at the moment and bringing more work to the 1,600 members, because at the moment they're not all busy all the time. And that's why we provide them other services, right? Because it's a community. It's not just about the work.
We always knew that we weren't going to be able to get everybody work, you know, because we are at the mercy of the demand in the marketplace. But when we started the business, first of all, our proposition always to our members was, we're going to help you earn, learn and connect. And that was kind of our mantra. And, you know, earn was like all of the work that we would do to shake the trees, knock on doors, get clients onboarded and try and find, you know, roles for the right people. Learn and connect was everything that we would do around events and, you know, the webinars that we would put on over lunchtime, which we put on so many, where we bring in experts to talk about some of the pain points associated with freelancing, whether it's networking or business development or finance or, you know, just kind of building your own personal brand. And as Rebecca has kind of outlined, we've now built on that foundation. We only monetized the earn part of the work that we did for the last 5 years. We've proved that there's a demand for it. And now we've really kind of fleshed that out into these three new pillars: community, workforce and education. And so it's a very natural extension of where we've come from. And we're really, really excited to see particularly how the education part of what we're going to do is really going to add value, not just to our members, but also to our clients.
So can I talk to you a little bit just about why clients use us? Because,
well, I was going to ask you, and it leads into this one, what is the typical client?
Yeah.
Right. And then you tell me why they use you guys.
So I think people might be surprised to know that the typical client is actually a corporate client, and they're quite big and sizable. And the reason they come to us is because they're generally facing a common problem, okay? And that is that they've had budget cuts, they're being asked to do more with less, the marketing landscape is becoming super fragmented, and you need highly specialized skills.
For short periods of time.
For short periods of time, exactly. Yeah. And they're struggling to kind of do everything. And then if you bring into the mix what happened over COVID, where some people maybe left their roles, other people maybe got promoted up a little early, and maybe they don't have all of the skills yet, they're kind of learning the skills for their new role as they go. It's creating a lot of pressure for marketing directors and CMOs. And so they come to us. They might even have a hiring freeze. Sometimes they have hiring freeze. They're not allowed to hire. So they come to us, and Una kind of talks you through the cost structure. That actually represents amazing value for money, because if you are going to hire somebody and go through a full recruitment cost, the standard figure is it costs you 150% of the role cost. Mm. Okay, then you're paying employee PRSI, you're paying towards a pension, you're paying overheads, you've got hardware overheads, there's loads of things. So this is a really low risk, low cost way for marketing directors to access amazing expert talent and only pay for what they use. Mm. So that's why they come.
And access it really quickly.
Really quickly.
So we had a situation a couple of weeks ago with a client who came to us. I won't say the name of the client, but it's a very big organization. They were looking for a very, very specialized role in marketing automation. And they came to us and they said, we've been looking for 3 months for this person. We've tried all the big job sites. We've tried a couple of the big recruitment firms.
Agencies.
And we have, like, we've been sent all these people who just do not, just like, they're not right for the role. They don't even match the spec. We've spent 3 months trying to find this person. And it was a little bit like, we're coming to you as last roll of the dice. I mean, we'd love to be the first roll of the dice, and maybe we will be next time. But we spent a couple of days just making sure that all of our T's and C's were kind of agreed, and we had all of the information that we needed to know in order to be able to make a really, really good match. And we had somebody within 24 hours.
And somebody they never thought they were going to find, who is a perfect match for what they need.
And she's starting next Tuesday.
And it's because that's where the tech comes in. Mm. So because we have our community housed in this platform, it has a search function. We go in, we search for the skills, and we get, you know, maybe 40 people come back. Mm. And then we're able to kind of whittle down a little bit more on the skills and say, well, do they have the right level of experience? How much have they done in that one area, etc. What clients have they worked with? What do their references say? So Una is often, we call Una the chief matchmaker, and she is often able to turn things around within kind of 24, 48 hours. Like, it's super fast. Mm-hmm. It's impressive.
And when you look at the ever-changing landscape of marketing, right, the reality is in 5 years' time in this, there's going to be a whole series of jobs that don't exist today that will be there, right? And it's funny because we had the guys from Zoma on a couple of weeks ago, and they were saying, listen, we're taking people in from college, and they, you know, they've done college, but they don't have the skills because they only get them on the job, and then you're getting them and then you're losing them, and you're just on this constant thing. So as this progresses, you know, you'll ultimately, I'm sure, find that certain silos will just drift away, no longer be of use to anybody, and there'll be a whole series of new things that, as I said, nobody's talking about today.
Absolutely. Like, and we've seen that over the past 5 years. The nature of the roles has changed dramatically, and the demand for the particular roles has changed dramatically. So when we started off, first of all, we sort of anticipated that our membership would be made up mostly of creatives, you know, art directors, copywriters. Unfortunately, the demand for those roles has really kind of decreased for a variety of reasons, not the least of which would probably be AI, but also agencies who would traditionally, you know, hire in freelancers to do, you know, particular work. They have their own banks of freelancers that they use, so they don't always need to kind of get access to new people because they have a lot of people on their books as it is. But the roles that have really increased are around performance marketing, digital, AI, CX, brand strategy. You know, a lot of brands are in that kind of reappraisal mode where they need to kind of really define what they mean to people in this kind of new change, broader economic environment and so on, and how people's needs and wants and aspirations are changing all the time. We had a fantastic session towards the end of last year with Jared O'Neill from Warwick Research, and, you know, we talked about this sort of vibe session. Mm-hmm. Have you heard about the vibe session? So it's just like this kind of feeling of, we're all doing great, but actually nobody's really feeling it. You know, everybody's kind of really struggling, and brands are really kind of feeling that in a big way. And we see that with our senior marketing clients. They're just really, really struggling to, I mean, they work so hard, and they are putting out fires right, left and centre, but most of the time they're spending defending their budgets and hiring new people on their team and trying to kind of keep up with the rate and pace of change and adopt new technologies. And all of this is going to completely change the types of roles that people are going to be looking for in the next number of years.
And probably the nature of the employment contract too, because if all of this stuff is kind of at the fringe or at the front, the new frontier, you don't want to spend 150% of the salary getting that and finding out, actually, do you know what? This isn't for us. We thought it was going to be for us, but it's not for us, because you're then stuck with somebody at the tail end of it.
And you may not need somebody 100% of the time. Like, that's just the reality. We would find that most of the freelancers that we work with are super productive. And clients often comment on it. They can't get over the amount of work people get through. And it's because they want to move on to the next gig.
And they're very experienced. And they're very, very experienced. So they can go in. They're used to working with different types of people, different types of organizations. They've typically kind of seen it all before. They're able to kind of go in, like, really add value from the get-go, and then leave the client kind of...
They're not there for a long time. They're there for a good time. Plain and simple. What would you say has been the sliding door moment of the for the business so far?
Wow, okay, well, there's been a number of sliding door moments. The first, I guess, was actually realising that, you know, this couldn't continue as a pro bono business, and really trying to find the model that was going to work. And as, you know, we were talking to the lads before this particular podcast began, and, like, you know, the lessons that we learned in those early days were just so brilliant, but they were kind of, some of them were hilarious, because the guy who's involved in this business here in these four walls, he was our first client, and we ended up, our commercial model was so bananas that we ended up owing him money. So I wish I'd framed that invoice as a really big kind of sliding door moment. I think another sliding door moment was actually introducing a search fee, because that was the difference between us being busy fools and being busy. Because what we did was, we started off, first of all, we had no search fee. We had people just come to us. If they engaged a freelancer, we'd have a markup on their fees. And what would happen is everybody was, like, madly curious about the kind of people that we had on our platform. And they wanted to see who we had. And so they would engage us. We would, you know, drop everything, work crazy to get a list to them, like, within 24 hours. And then they go, no, I'm not going to bother. So after that happened about, you know, kind of four or five times in 1 week, we decided enough. Like, we're just going to introduce some sort of measure that gets rid of tire kickers. And we introduced this search fee, and it was, it was a real big game changer. For me personally, a big kind of sliding door moment was last year. Peter, who had worked with me for the first sort of 4 years of building up the indie list, decided that he was retiring. So obviously for a founder and in a small business, that's psychologically very unsettling. Yeah, very, very unsettling. And you know, kind of after a few weeks, maybe a few months of putting my head in the sand and hoping it would all go away, I approached Rebecca, and because I knew that, you know, on my own with Amanda, who's our community manager, that we would, you know, we would stabilize the ship after Peter left, but we wouldn't grow. So the big sliding door moment was finding Rebecca, who has, as she said herself, you know, we're very similar in lots of ways, but then really different in lots of other ways, which is really brilliant, because, you know, there were things that we just didn't get to before Rebecca started. And, you know, I would say Rebecca walked into a fever dream and she just basically said, okay, we're going to like build, we're going to go back and actually kind of build really, really solid foundations or rebuild solid foundations.
She's way too hard on herself.
She calls herself a builder, but, you know, she's kind of come in and said, look, you know, these are the systems that we need to have in place in order to scale. And what we've done up until this point has been great, but there are things that we need to do better in order to kind of grow faster. So that was a big starting point. Are there any more that you think that in your...
No, I'd say there's a few to come. You know, coming out with this new proposition is going to be really interesting. And we have aspirations to go into other markets.
And geographic markets.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's going to be super interesting. Yeah. Like the business to date has been all self-funded.
Right.
It's debt-free, self-funded, which is really phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Profitable from the get-go.
Yeah, profitable. So I think that the next stages will just be really interesting. We haven't decided what route we want to go yet, whether we're going to try and continue to self-fund or whether we're going to go and seek investment. Mm-hmm. I think we'll do our soft relaunch in the summer. And we want to prove a couple of things about some of the new revenue streams. And once we have that done, then we'll decide, are we going for investment or are we doing it ourselves?
There is an idea out there, you know, as you get bigger, either the level of innovation or the level of service falls in a company. And you made a point a few minutes ago that Una is the chief matchmaker, right? If you start ramping this up, there's only one Una.
There is. Right. We're already thinking about this.
So how, you know, what are you trying to put in place to make sure that level of service or level of innovation or level of accuracy actually is probably more important in this, doesn't diminish as you get busier?
Yeah, a lot of that revolves around process. Okay, so we're building a culture that we want the Indie List to represent. And so that when we onboard new team members, they will need to evoke those values that we evoke. And then it is about good training. You know, we have to have people who are good at client service. We need to have people who understand marketing and how it works, because, you know, it's super broad and we have loads of different skill sets. So we need to add people that understand that. And I guess people who have hired before. So people who understand what good HR hiring practices look like. Even when we're doing matching for new business, it's more in a HRE space, because you need to be a good listener. Yeah. You need to be able to understand, read between the lines of what a client is telling you.
And what they actually mean.
So we spend now a lot of time, we basically don't get out of bed unless we have a signed contract and a proper brief.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And it just makes it much faster for everybody. But we're happy to work with clients on their brief to make sure that they're actually getting to the right place. Because sometimes they'll say, I need somebody with 3 years experience. And you're like, well, what you're asking them to do is more like 7 years of experience. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of...
What you're willing to pay is more like four.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of it, I mean, you know, it's not rocket science, you know, but the human powered part of what we do is so important, and actually is probably becoming quite unique now in terms of a lot of these SaaS businesses. You know, we even see CVs coming in and we look at them and we go, it's like AI, it's generated by AI. So we're not going to put anyone forward if we don't ourselves believe that they're the right person for the job. You know, we always say, like, we would prefer to give the client no person than give them the wrong person. Because if we give them the wrong person, they'll never come back to us. Whereas if we don't give them anyone, they might be annoyed with us for 5 minutes, but they'll give us another shot down the line. And, you know, like picking up the phone and talking to a candidate and, you know, just having a really kind of open conversation about who they are and what, you know, what their experience has been, what they're looking for in their new roles, what inspires them, what are things that kind of motivate them, what are their aspirations, all of those sorts of things that you would sit down and chat to people over a cup of coffee are the things actually that I think, end up making a really, really good match. And sometimes when you're on a phone to the customer and you have a really good understanding of the customer as well and who they are as an organization and what are their goals as a business, and it's really kind of wonderful when that moment happens where they say something to you and it just kind of sparks.
I know the person.
And like, it's kind of like, I'm kind of going, I wonder, is there a way for me to politely just tell them to stop talking so that I can tell them. I have the most wonderful candidate for them. And, you know.
Well, I have one for you. Here's a bit of a curveball for you, though, right?
Oh, God, I don't like those, Aidan.
You know, let's say you have the candidate, right? And they are the best at what they do. And so do you let them do what they do, or, you know, that idea of there's collateral with them, you know, it's the classic idea of hiring a talented asshole, right? And it happens all the time. But do you think when you're doing that matchmaking bit, what is more important? Is it to make sure the cultural fit, or is it the talent, or are there clients out there who just go, I don't care if he's talented asshole, it's the talented bit I want. I don't care about the other bit.
Oh, I think that's a really, really interesting question. And, you know, like when we screen people for, you know, when we bring them on, and when we onboard them on the indie list, there are four things that we're looking for. We want them to be experienced in the industry. We want them to be endorsed by their peers within the industry. We want them to have, you know, that they can demonstrate their dependability and their ability to kind of get work done. And then the last thing is we want them to be really open-minded and really nice people to work with, because we have all worked with the talented assholes in our career. Mm-hmm. And our view is that it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're nice people. We are running a purpose-led business. We work with some amazing clients who are lovely people. We've got 1,600 people in our community, a lot of whom are really, really great. If we find somebody who's like, we have a sort of an unspoken rule, which is like, prima donnas and blowhards need not apply. Mm. And in our view, I can't say that one is more important than the other, but it's highly unlikely that a talented arsehole will get the role, because yes, you need to be talented, but you need to be able to kind of work well with people, particularly from a marketing perspective, which is, you know, it's a very collaborative business. You know, you have to build really strong relationships. You have to have really strong EQ and really to be able to kind of bring people on a journey with you. If you are that sort of spiky genius,
you don't necessarily want to be part of a community if you're that personality type either. And it is a community, you know, and we need to kind of bolster.
Yeah, like we've had a lot of spiky people. You know, what's the indie list ever done for me? Well, aside from, you know, generating like nearly 6 million in new revenue from freelancers and putting on like nearly 100 free events and creating all these opportunities for, you know, we haven't managed to get you a job yet, but, you know.
Yeah, it needs to be more than just the work.
Yeah.
Do you obsess about the small things?
Ooh, I've certainly tried to calm that down. I would say yes, I used to obsess about small things all the time.
Right.
But I've kind of learned that, you know, because I'm so old now, that they don't matter as much, and that actually there's always ways around things, and sometimes those small things turn out to be great opportunities, like if they're difficult small things. So, and
I would say that I, to my detriment, do not obsess about them at all, which is why Rebecca walked into a fever dream. You know, look, I there are things that I'm really good at, and there are certain things that I'm probably not so great at, and a lot of them are the small things. Mm-hmm. And I know they're really, really important, but I surround myself with people who are really, really good at all of that other sort of stuff.
I had one person on the show who said, I don't obsess about the small things. I obsess about the small things that are important.
Mm. Yeah, I would say I'm very detail-oriented, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, you know, do I overthink and have sleepless nights about the small things now? No, I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to decision-making, is it data-based or gut feel? I think I know the answer to this, right? Yeah. I think I've got one and one. I think I have a good feel and I have a data-based one here.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Probably. Yeah. Probably.
Bit of gut thrown in with the data, you know.
But yes. I think we've got a really, really strong sort of sense of who we are, what we're trying to achieve, what's really, really important to us. And we keep on refreshing that and making sure that it's relevant for the services that we want to offer in the commercial business, you know, as well. So that, you know, having real clarity on what that is provides a great sort of signpost for us in terms of the big strategic decisions that we want to make. But the other thing is that, you know, we always kind of go back to where this came from. This came from like a gut feeling. Our view is, let's just try it and see what happens. And if it doesn't work out, well, then it doesn't work out, you know, and we'll just like kind of dust ourselves down and start again.
Being able to make mistakes, like being allowing yourself to make mistakes, I think it makes for a much better business. Because
so therefore, fear of failure has never been an issue, or has it been a driving force as opposed to
fear of failure? Well, no, I suppose, honestly, none of us really want to fail. Small fails are really welcome. You know, we're kind of trying to implement this thing now called the teacup moment, where something happens during the week and you go, my God, if I had ignored that, it could have caused a big problem. And we share that among our teams so that we all can learn from it, and we can all also just realize that it is okay to make mistakes as long as we learn from them and we sort of put measures in place that, you know, avoid them happening in the future. Obviously, we don't want this business to fail. We now have, you know, we feel a sort of sense of responsibility to the members who have joined our community. We don't want to fail for ourselves. We don't want to fail for them. We don't want to fail for the, you know, the industry in Ireland. We're so, so proud of what we've done, what we've achieved, and the fact that there wasn't, you know, there wasn't an indie list before this time. And so the fear of failure is about that not realizing its potential, you know. But yeah, small failures, bring them on.
You have to learn and pivot and change, and that's part of it.
What advice would you give young people about careers, about life, about anything?
Will we talk about our new initiative?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so it's still early stages, okay, concept stage, but what we're hoping to do is introduce young indies. And it is the reason for this is there are, in some cases, like charity clients that just don't have massive budgets and want to work with people who are up and coming and maybe aren't charging the full whack. And we want to give them an opportunity to work with charities and other organisations. But a lot of them don't have the business experience yet, and they need guidance. So they don't know how to follow through on a sales process, you know, and follow up with clients properly. They don't know how to invoice properly or on time, and the fact that they may have to wait for payment, it doesn't just come like that. All of those things. So we're gonna onboard some of these young indies. We're gonna match them with mentors within our community, so that they will get taught the skills, and then they will be paid by charities and clients, but at a lesser rate. And we're not going to add fee to it. We're going to do this as a kind of a goodwill.
So you need to be here for talent.
Yeah. We want to bring people into the marketing industry and show them how exciting and great it can be and give them a proper good chance. Because more and more there are young people coming in who are like 20 or 19. They're not necessarily coming out of college at 23 and 24. A lot of them are working through college with practical skills that they've learned. So we want to be able to help them.
And we also have kids ourselves who are, you know, kind of college age, getting to that point where they're coming to the end of their college careers. And I think, you know, certainly in case of my own kids, I would sort of say, you know, go where your interest lies. I hear people saying to, you know, my kids now who are both sort of like second last year in college, and saying, you know, what are your plans? What are you going to do? Are you going to do a master's? Are you going to do whatever? And I can see them getting kind of just rattled by it. And I just say to them, like, it'll happen. It'll, you know, it will come to you. Don't stress about it. Just like finish what you're doing right now. And it was almost like when the indie list happened, first of all, I used to walk around my garden going, what am I going to do with my life? Now, this was before it started. And I used to go, think, Una, think, what are you going to do? And then I just sort of said to myself, relax, you know, it'll emerge, it'll come when the time is right. And I would say that to young people as well. But I think if a young person is getting a job now, I would say be visible, be in the office, learn from the people around you, be seen by the boss, and keep on that journey of learning.
And I would say I didn't come into marketing through business or marketing. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a degree in science. I had no intent. I was going to be a horse physiotherapist.
Data. Data. Good.
So, but I ended up here, and that's because I was willing to kind of follow the opportunities. Mm. And I would say that to other young people, like, just because you've done a history degree or whatever, you've come out of school, like, if you feel you have that entrepreneurial spirit and you want to work for yourself and go out, then follow that. Mm-hmm. Like, there are supports. People are very helpful and willing to, you know, introduce you, build your network, like, help you along the way, provide support. Mm. So you don't have to tick every box. You can.
It's the amount of entrepreneurs that have been on the show that have said this same thing, this idea of Ireland is brilliant, that there's nobody really, if you pick up a phone or send an email to, that they wouldn't meet you for a cup of coffee and a chat. You say it's not the same worldwide. We said Ireland is particularly ripe for that yeah. There's very few people that just would ignore an email.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's Irish networks all over the world. Yeah. Like, we're so well connected around the world.
Yeah. And people do like being asked to help. Like, when I went out, first of all, as a freelancer back in 2005, the first thing I did, I said I was going to make 5 phone calls every day. That was my strategy. Make 5 phone calls every day. And I would say every single person that I spoke to gave me their time, bought the coffees, helped me out. And it really just the move that you have to take as the individual is to ask for the help.
Yeah.
You know, and to know what to ask for as well, because sometimes you don't, you know, you want help from somebody, but you have no idea what you want to ask them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, it's like, what's the purpose of this meeting? What is the outcome I'm hoping to get from it? And then fill in the gap.
Do you hate losing or love winning?
Probably want to be too.
Love winning.
Do you love winning?
Love winning.
I probably hate losing, I have to be honest.
I would have thought it was the other way around, I have to say.
Love winning. I think, you know, I think it's probably because I'm the youngest of 5 children. Okay. And I used to have to sort of jump up and down to kind of go, you know, my idea or whatever the case may be. But I suppose I've always had this sort of sense of you have to challenge the status quo. Things are broken and they don't have to remain that way. So when you have that opportunity and you can show by winning that it is possible, that's just so sweet. The hate losing, yeah, look, we've all been there and we all lose all the time. But you have to kind of dust yourself down and move on.
I would say that I'm quite kind of client service oriented, right? So I really like to be able to, I was, you know, a bit of an old people pleaser. So if it fails and I'm like, that's so annoying. But then I've also had to realize that you just can't please everybody.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
Right.
No, it can't be that time already.
I'm afraid it is.
Chatterboxes.
Okay. I know that's too hard.
No, this is a very easy one. It's a very easy one, but it could be interesting.
Uh-oh.
If you do something else career-wise, what would it be and why?
Well, I would have been the horse physio.
Horse physio. So, well, I always wanted to be a doctor, actually. And I think that's probably, there's a sense of service within that has kind of come through in the work that I'm doing now. But recently, I've become obsessed with Irish mythology. So I've decided if I won the lottery or the Indie List was bought for a gazillion. Might go back to study Celtic mythology or something.
Amazing. Yeah. I have aspirations to be a screenwriter. Someday. I have a story that I want to develop. So maybe one day there'll be time. I might be useless at it though.
The good news is you have lots of freelancers that can help you.
You see, there you go. We'll see.
Well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guests, Una Hurley and Rebecca Brooks. Don't forget to like, share and subscribe or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. Many thanks and we'll see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.